Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Latino Vote Podcast. And for all of you YouTube subscribers, I am dressed like a Baptist preacher today, and I'm going to try to put the Christ back into Mike Madrid. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I thought you were getting back from a parole hearing or something. I figured that you were probably in court, but it's
That's
good.
You clean up good.
You clean up good. If you aren't watching on YouTube, folks, you owe it to yourself to make sure you're watching this episode visually, because
I got a shirt on. It's the same color as a baby piglet. It's like a light pink with a really dapper purple tie. Ebony dresses me these days when I do my TV appearances so that I look like, as she would say, a grown ass man instead of a homeless person like when she met me, Mike. I can't believe she messes with me like that. And we'll talk about my fashion.
He's got a pink cowboy hat on too, just so that you're all aware.
The funny thing is I got a pink cowboy hat that Ebony wears when she did the Barbie thing, but I don't wear it. Anyway, there's nothing going on in the news this week, so we probably don't have anything to talk about, but yeah. Mike, I was going to get your thoughts this morning when I did a little TV. They talked about how last night, because of the Georgia primary and the Hawaiian primaries, which is probably where you're simulcasting in from, that Joe Biden is now the official nominee because he has enough delegates to be the nominee. And now this will be the longest presidential campaign in the history of modern politics. What do you say, Mike, besides you want to buy a TV station?
I want to see Hawaii. I'm making some plans later this year to go check out Hawaii. I've never been to Hawaii. The longest general election in modern history, boy, is exactly what the American public does not want. With two of the oldest candidates in the history of the Republic, we've got a long stretch ahead of us. The good news is, y'all can listen here to the Latino Vote Podcast and be entertained through the process of the ugly, stretch that it's going to be. Look, I think this is going to be a different style of campaign too, just because of the nature of the two candidates. If I'm Joe Biden, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to put him on four or five rallies a day and shuttle him from plane to plane. I'm going to keep it to two. I'm going to keep it crisp and clean for obvious reasons that we don't need to go in depth on, and frame these rallies and appearances in a much more constrained environment. If I'm Donald Trump, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do because my court docket's going to be a little bit more complicated. So how do you can even plan a rally? You got to hope that supporters show up more than opponents when he's outside of the courthouse.
He's going to have the rallies after the court closes. He can be court during the daytime and rally in the evening, maybe, Mike.
And I think that's to Biden's advantage. I don't think he needs to do kind of the rah-rah stuff as much as has traditionally been, you know, what we expect in presidential campaigns, because the contrast with what's going to be happening with Trump is going to be something extraordinary. I mean, Trump will do his rallies, but they all look the same now. They're nothing we don't expect. I think it's a little bit more unique when Joe Biden does it, or anybody does it for that matter. I mean, but Trump hasn't stopped going to rallies even when he wasn't president and wasn't a candidate, right? So that's not new. What is going to be new is his impromptu press conferences, blaming the courts, blaming the judges, blaming the lawyers, blaming the system, blaming the man for all of his legal problems. So, yeah, buckle in, folks. It's going to be a long, long election cycle.
Trump went on last night and talked about how the country was ending. Everything was over. It's the worst president, the worst. Like, I don't know why. He just sounds like he hates America. Anyway, let me talk about systematically what's going to happen with a longer election. For all of you nerds out there that love listening to this podcast about what happens behind the scenes, let me give you nerds a little political advice. And I said this on TV this morning. In a campaign, there's certain things you can't get back, and you can't get back time spent. So an advantage that we have now is this long period of time. If I was sitting there as a consultant like I was with Bernie or other folks, like I'm doing right now with Ebony Payne, trying to figure out what the other people are going to be doing, well, how do we use our advantage of having more money than every other candidate in the city council race? You start spending it earlier and making them spend money they don't have, right? That way, at the end, they're out of money and we still are flush with money. That's in a city council race. But guess what? It's the same with the presidential. Joe Biden has a lot of money. And as Mike Madrid has reported and talked about, one of the problems with Donald Trump is he spent all of his money on his legal bills. And he does not have, and the RNC does not have, the money that they normally would have that would be comparable to what the Democrat has. So what I'm saying to all of you Democrats out there, and you free public advice for Biden advisors, is use the time advantage you have. Start spending money early to define and remind people what a Donald Trump second term presidency would look like. You're going to make him mad. He'll go up with money he don't have to try to match you. And then he starts really flailing in the summer when his cash flow problem starts. Now, what I've just given you is behind the scenes, what goes on in a campaign to kind of force the hands of the other people. When we started running for city council, people are laughed at me in Ebony because we put up all these yard signs. This is elementary, but stay with me. All these yard signs in November and in December. And they were like, why would you do that? Well, I did that because I had the advantage of she'd raised a lot of money early. And I knew that it would force the other candidates to spend money on stupid yard signs that make no difference so that later on in this campaign, right now for everybody that's scoring at home, that they wouldn't have money to do real things like mail, digital ads. That's what Joe Biden has to do now, but on a bigger scale. Do you agree, Mike?
I think that's really smart tactics. I also think that in some way, in some form, there needs to be a just a compressed legal strategy beyond where they're already at. I mean, the RNC is so strapped for cash that they've now publicly said they're not going to open up these minority outreach centers.
Are you saying the RNC is going to make the Republican Party white again? Is that what we're doing?
I mean, in effect, that's essentially what's going on. What I'll also say is that somebody somewhere who's a lawyer with an ambitious lawyer has got to just kind of continue to work to bury these guys in legal bills. Just the lawfare, I guess, vernacular. You can Google that word. It starts with a V.
I had vernacular one time, but I went and got a shot and got it taken care of.
Tactics, good tactics win close races. You got to, strategy's only going to get you so far when it's going to be a close race. And so what Chuck's talking about, the city council race does apply at the national level. I don't know how many of you guys remember Trump pulling over $100 million worth of ads in the final stretch of the 2020 campaign. Think about it. If he hadn't run out of cash, bad cash management, they had a good chance that they would have won that race. And Biden wins the race by less than 60,000 votes across three states, and Trump pulled multi-million dollar figure ads because they ran out of cash. I mean, that's just, if one thing Trump can't do is manage money, right? So fight him and stretch him thin. They're already running out of dough. They're already shutting down centers. They're already changing their plans. He had to put his daughter-in-law in charge because they've got to make sure they can launder the money the right way. And nobody cries foul.
Are you saying that Donald Trump has put a family member in charge of the RNC as well, Mike?
It's the family business, brother. It's the way organized crime works.
Look, I was in the union for 21 years. This sounds kind of something I've heard before.
That was Chuck Rocha said that, by the way, FBI. That
I'm just not saying Mike Madrid. The union's not an organized crime. I'm just saying that.
You clarified it was not Mike Madrid saying that. It wasn't the Republican saying that. That was Chuck Rocha.
Ooh, I'm just saying I was seeing some shit.
So I bleed him and make him fight on battlegrounds where he shouldn't have to be spending money, tie him down and just make it look. They're already having weaknesses with their small and large donor programs. People don't have confidence in this anymore. Putting your family member in charge of the RNC is not a good idea. It doesn't send the right message. And the fact that you're open and brazen about these multi-million dollar legal bills that you cannot pay, obviously, because you can't post bond for your defamation verdicts. Trump's got big money problems, and now is the time to hit the gas and run hard at him so he can't get off the ground, which is exactly what you're saying, I think, right, Chuck?
Yep. And something that folks need to keep, again, nerds, reporters, consultants, all the people that listen will get this, but this is something else that I'll remind you throughout the summer, is that for every dollar that Joe Biden spends from his campaign and Donald Trump spends from his campaign, that dollar, which most of these dollars are used to buy digital and TV advertising, most of the TV advertising, that dollar goes further when you're a candidate because you get a lower rate as a candidate. So when you assume that some super PAC is going to come in, funded by Elon Musk, for example, and it's going to bail out Donald Trump, and that could happen. Elon Musk could say, here's $100 million to go make sure that my guy is put into office. Well, that buy that the super PAC does only gets about 50 cents on the dollar. It costs almost double what the candidate ad will by the time we get to the end of this. So it's some of the most inefficient spend. as you will. Now, I know that's in the weeds, but that matters when you're talking about trying to make up ground. And they're all like, well, the super PAC will just make it up. And they can make up part of that. But the gold dollars, the platinum dollars, as the boys in the hood say, goes further with that cash that's in the candidate's campaign because they get such a better rate. And I think this is going to be a conversation that we have all summer. We're going to watch how the money flows from these super PACs. The walls have went up in the super PAC, so they are not up on air now, but I assume they will be up on the air in the coming months because they're doing both. Everybody's doing their cooling off period. Again, for all of you brainiacs and insiders, you know what I'm talking about. All the walls at the different committees have went up. There's a little bit of a month or two cooling off and all hell's going to break loose. Let me look at my fancy calendar on the wall. Like around May, it's going to be nonstop ads. And if you're Joe Biden and you have the advantage of money, you go up. And let me tie this to one more fact and give Mike a chance to respond before we move on to our next topic. As we talk about Latino voters and voters of color and Asian voters and Black voters who normally don't get information till the end, this is a prime opportunity where I think you will see Joe Biden, who knows, and the DNC knows they have a problem with Latinos. They know there's been some slippage with
Black. Wait. What did
I said a little bit. I said a little bit.
The DNC knows it's got a problem with Latino voters?
Yes.
Are we breaking news here, Chuck Rocha?
No, I said a little bit. The
Democrats figuring this out?
Your example of a little bit and my example of a little bit is too much of a little bit. So what they will do is they'll start hopefully running ads in Spanish and English targeting the Latinos before Donald Trump has money to spend anywhere. Mike Madrid just said the RNC's turned over to his daughter. There's a report out this morning saying they're going to make the RNC white again and that they're going to kind of disband all their outreach efforts. Well, that don't mean that Donald Trump's going to. Donald Trump's still going to be Donald Trump. But this is the advantage of time in the summer and late spring when nobody's in their mailboxes. Right, Mike?
I mean, I think you've outlined this scenario very, very well, especially for people who aren't in the weeds like you and I are. That was a clinic. That was very helpful for people, I think, to understand
a little bit, the
considerations in which we're making the decisions. I am gonna disagree on the strategy a little bit, and here's a little bit.
Oh my God,
I would, if I'm Biden, I would go hard at the Republican base. I wouldn't be spending those millions of dollars on Latinos, young people, voters of color. I go right at Republicans. And the reason why is because Trump's showing weaker now with Republicans to a greater degree than at any time since he secured the nomination in 2016. Nikki Haley wasn't on the ballot and she's pulling 15-16% of the vote. That is pure anti-Trump vote. And let me put this in perspective. 4 years ago this month, when I was with the Lincoln Project, we were looking at all of our polling data analytics and we were seeing 6% of Republicans. This is just days after the first impeachment hearing when Donald Trump is voice recorded blackmailing Zelensky. Okay, to pick up some dirt, political dirt on Joe Biden if he wants arms to defend himself from a Russian incursion. And Republicans. Incursion. Write that down too. You're getting a whole
incursion. God almighty, I'm gonna be so good on TV next week. Go ahead, incursion.
You mean the spelling bee? I mean, we're gonna get you in the spelling bee, Chuck Rocha, next month. I don't remember what I was talking about, but it was
Incursion. We're giving them weapons to blow up somebody.
No. It was about Trump and
sorry to interrupt. That's my fault.
6% of Republicans at this time are saying they will be never Trump. They aren't gonna vote for minority circumstances. We're now sitting at three times that. So when you see a break in the enemy's lines, Mike Madrid's approach is not to go to base, is to attack. Send the horses down the field, draw your swords, unleash the cannons, and open up the muskets, and let's take these guys on. Because if you can lock down over 10% of the Republican base, if you're Joe Biden, the races are functionally over early. And then you're just, you know, kicking them around the schoolyard like a paralyzed rat. And that's where you want Donald Trump. You want him. You want him on defense. So, yeah, there is an argument for going to base and solidifying his base. I'm of the inclination that if your enemy is out of ammunition, out of money in this case, and he's weaker in the polls and you're sitting in a much stronger position, attack the guy, go straight at his base, and try to end this race early.
Before we transition, I'll just say that there's going to be over $10 billion spent on this election.
With
there's
a B?
With a B. That's not like last week when we were talking about bazillion. That's don't get confused.
Mm. Okay.
But billion. So there's going to be plenty of money. And Chuck Roach would say you could do both. Like you got enough money, you could do both. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let me pivot to something I saw Mike tweeting about on the Twitters or the X's or whatever y'all call that social media thing this week, which is he talked about the Democrats creating a committee about immigration. And why did that get you so worked up, Madrid? Man. There's your little T-ball. There you go.
I was excited. Thank you for that setup. The Democrats yesterday created something called the Democratic Border Security Group, working group or conference or caucus or something. 26 members.
Sounds important.
This is really important, and it's a great move. Again, I need to start invoicing these guys because I know they're all listening to the podcast, and they're all listening to Madrid and saying, that Madrid guy doesn't have as nice a voice as Chuck has Roach's got, but damn, this guy is like brilliant. Why were we not listening to that guy years ago? That's literally, I think, what the topic of the conference is.
I don't think DNC are.
And if they're not, they should be.
I don't think that's it, but you should go ahead. And I don't think that's the conversation.
You don't think so?
No.
So
but look, tell us why it's brilliant for Democrats to set up a committee on immigration.
The fight between Democrats and Republicans for 30 years, the distinction has been that Republicans have made this about border security, national security, and personal security. For them, it's security. That's the value proposition that they're speaking to voters on. For Democrats, they're talking about immigration reform. And I happen to agree with them, and I happen to have been in that fight with them. Immigration reform is much easier to talk about when immigration levels are low. We get to start talking about things like a pathway to citizenship, and how do you protect DACA? How do you make it possible for people who have been here hiding in the shadows to bring them out, make them legitimate, and give them not only a role and a place in our society, but a pathway to become an American citizen? Those are all the right conversations to be having. But they are not where the American public is now when immigration is spiking and 75% of Americans now say that this is a crisis. The Democrats have to seize the high ground on the security issue. And damn if Henry Cuellar and Tom Suozzi haven't seized it in exactly the right way to get out there and not talk about all the other stuff. Doesn't mean that they're opposed to it, but it's kind of like when you offer your kids peanut butter or chocolate for dessert. They'll take both, but they'll take any one of them too. And that's where you need to focus on. Get what you can get. There's no immigration reform to be had. So quit talking about it. Go win the political battle. Okay. And that's where Tom Suozzi is saying, this is how I just won, by leaning into security, border security. Doesn't mean I don't support the other stuff. But that's not the way you beat Republicans on this. That's not the way you seize the high ground. Cuellar, for his, you know, one of the most moderate, probably the most moderate Democrat in the conference, is saying, I've been saying this for years, mainly because I listen to Mike Madrid on the Latino Vote podcast, but that's where we need to be. And then you start to see Ruben Gallego and more than a half a dozen or more of the competitive targeted Democratic seats jumping on board and signing on, saying this is the way we should be going, Democrats. Now, this isn't just right-wing Mike Madrid railing on immigration. This is really smart politics, but more importantly, it's a foundational break in the Democratic Party from where they have been heading since 2012. The Democrats have been leaning hard into immigration reform since 2012. After they did not get immigration reform from Obama, they were saying, we're going to get it from whoever we can, and this is what we're going to define the Latino vote interest priority main concern to be. No data, no evidence, credible data of evidence to suggest that, but that's what's happened. And by the way, that leaning to the left on immigration coincided perfectly with Democrats losing more and more of the Hispanic vote. Now, am I going to say that that's the reason? No, I'm going to say it's a reason. And the a reason is because along with that comes the belief, misguided as it is, that the issues surrounding immigration are front row and center for Latinos. And I will say this till the day the dogs come home, as they say in Czech Roach.
The dogs.
Is that how the Texans say it? The dogs come home? Is that a thing?
We let them out to hunt and they come home in the evening. But you go ahead, city boy.
that Latino voters do not have immigration reform as a top five issue. We never have. So I'm applauding the DNC and the Democratic Border Security Caucus for taking Mike Madrid's advice a little too late, but not so late that they can't recover and do great things with this, with the American public move back into position for a strong reelect for Joe Biden and probably pick up some seats in the House on this issue and this issue alone. I'm glad to see what Swazi did. I think it really set the tempo and the tone and gave some direction for other Democrats who are too afraid to speak out on this issue. What do you say, John?
I'm gonna wrap up this section by saying what I said a couple of weeks ago, which is I think that most people can understand that we can be a land of immigrants and have a vibrant immigration policy that is seamless, that is legal, that is faster, that doesn't put kids and mamas in cages, and also be a nation of laws. I think we can do both at the same time. Again, there's not a lack of money. There's a lack of will. And it's politically advantageous sometimes. That's my biggest word I will say today. For both parties at some level, I've seen people take on Democrats because we used to use it to whip up, you know, folks around immigration, and Republicans who, my God, are doing it on steroids now. So I do think that there is, what I keep going back with is that when you ask the American public in these polls that we do, they want immigration to work. And they levy back to the time when their parents came. There's an immigration story that's not the number one issue, but 65% of Latinos in America, this is open public, know somebody that's undocumented. It's a big problem. Like, they live in this country and work in this, and they're part of an underground economy and all the above. And most people in America agree that people should have a pathway to some kind of citizenship if they're working and they're paying local taxes. Like, these are the way common sense people have debates about immigration. I may personally line up to the left of that a little bit more than others, but at the core, politically, I think both can be right at the same time. But in the environment that we are in today, being able to talk about something that's on the TV every day, and I part of this is whipped up fear by the Republicans and Fox News. I get that. But you can't, to Mike's point, walk away from what the Republicans are doing eloquently to scare the shit out of suburban white people that immigrants are invading this country when they're not invading and hurting. The crime rate of immigrants are much less than regular folks. But once we start down that path of making that argument, we've already lost the conversation politically. So I think it's good that we've created this committee. I think it's good that we start, anytime there's a chance to be offense or be offensive, Chuck Roach is going to be at the front of offensive or offense. I want to get to two quick topics before, because they're timely. And one is, we need to pour one out for old Congressman Buck in Colorado, who was going to step down, for all of you, at the end of the year. He's in Colorado. I think it's 4, maybe 2. I'll turn around and look at my map while Mike's talking. But he was a conservative congressman in a very conservative district that said, I'm not running anymore. You people are effing crazy. I'm out of here. I'm not seeking reelection. Well, he got so pissed this week, and I think from what I heard this morning, he got pissed because he's the number 2 in seniority on some committee, and they made him talk last during some hearing, just showing him a bad disrespect. And he's like, F y'all. He gave his 2 weeks notice like he worked at Whataburger and's like, I'm out of here in 2 weeks. The governor has already called a special election to line up with their primaries, which happen on like June the 20th or something. Where, again, before I turn this over to Mike, you should know it's not a regular primary process. The state committee of both parties in Colorado get to pick who's going to be the nominee for their party. And the last thing I'll say to set this up for Mike is, let's not forget that the district right next door, which is literally across the state, was represented by this woman named Lauren Boebert, that I'll let Mike tell you about, who moved all the way across the state to leave a district that was R plus 1 or 2 that she barely won last time. And that's before she fondled her boyfriend in a movie theater, and moved to the other side of the state to run in Ken Buck's seat that he was supposed to give up at the end of the year. That is an R plus 20 seat. And it really has put some unique indicators on the map that's going to really, I think, screw Miss Boebert. But Mike, what say you?
This is that was a great setup, Chuck. This is a perfect example of somebody saying, F me, no, F you in politics. And that's why I love what Ken Buck did here. Ken Buck is playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. So as Chuck very accurately pointed out, Lauren Boebert is going to lose her seat because of her own personal peccadilloes. Chuck, we're getting a whole lot of words for you today.
Peccadilloes.
Jesus, personal Lord. Peccadilloes. Is it peccadillos or peccadilloes? Anyway, Lauren Boebert's personal problems. She decides she's going to move over to a neighboring district, which is much more Republican, much more conservative. The problem is she's got to get out of a multi-candidate primary. Her thinking is, all I need to do is get my MAGA base together and get 35% of the vote instead of 50% of the vote in a two-way primary, and I win this thing. So what happens is last week, Donald Trump endorses Lauren Boebert and basically puts her in a commanding position to win a plurality of the multi-candidate Republican field. Ken Buck, who is the leading anti-Trump voice in Congress, says, you know what? She ain't taking my seat. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to resign effective immediately. And what that does is it requires Ms. Boebert, if she's going to run in the special, to resign her current seat in order to run, which puts the Republican conference in a real pickle here.
They've got for those of you at home, they'll only have a 2-seat majority when Mr. Buck resigns.
They've got a
2-seat. If they both resign at the same time, it will be a 1-seat majority.
It will be a 1-seat majority, and there's no guarantee that Boebert gives up her seat in Congress, right? If she doesn't and runs to challenge a Republican who wins the seat in the special election, she's taken on a Republican incumbent, so that doesn't fly. Buck has completely upended the card table when Trump and Boebert thought that they checkmated him. So I love this move. This is brilliant politics. This is a great tactical way of saying Trump, you know, kind of F you Boebert and F you Trump on the way out. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see what decision Lauren Boebert's going to make. But if she gives up her seat, boy, there's going to be hell to pay in that caucus because there's just not enough votes. As you were saying, it's a 2-vote majority. They're already having trouble getting things done with their 3-vote majority. Like I said, just a masterstroke by Buck. And we're going to see what Johnson and Boebert and Trump all do to kind of resolve this situation they've gotten themselves into.
I looked at my handy dandy map behind me here, and Buck is in 4, Boebert is in 3. And it's much different if, let's say, the state committee picks somebody who's not Boebert to be the nominee and they can win the special election. It's much different running as an incumbent, even if you've won a special election, and it doesn't let her just waltz into the seat, because you then, once you become a congressperson, everybody needs their laws passed and you get plenty of money and recognition. And lots of folks in D.C. on the Republican side, even, you know, see Boebert as a reflection of Trump, because she actually is. So that means that she's not a stable vote. What corporations, even labor unions, anybody on either side, what people want is stability and know where you're at, because they want their money to continue to flow from the federal government. And so having crazy people there is not advantageous. You think that lobbyists are like these crazy right wingers, or let me give myself credit, or crazy left wingers. Congress wants stability. They want to get the certain basic things done. They don't want shutdowns, because once you start messing with the system, their money goes away and slows down. They need for their shocks, for their shareholders and people that have the stocks to do that. So this is going to be really interesting to watch. And hat tip to anybody who last week I talked about the pettiness of politics, even in a city council race. Maybe it don't stop till you get to the top, and it don't stop there either. A couple more quick things before we get out of here this week. There's 2 more things that have happened this week I want to get Mike's opinion on. One is a Ruben Gallego, and he wrote out his ad this week. We'll talk about that last. But I wanted to get Mike's thoughts on TikTok. Today in the United States House, part of the Congress is going to vote probably the fastest bill I've ever seen get through Congress to try to ban TikTok and force TikTok to have to sell to another company. I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate. I've got my own feelings about it. I'll tell you that personally, I'm against it. I think that there's going to, what I think would derail Donald Trump the most, and I said this on TV today, is Donald Trump, and Mike has said this, needs a very, very robust youth turnout to win this thing. While you've seen the youth start sliding towards Donald Trump again in some of the polling that we've seen, you couple the Gaza thing that we've talked about here and the Israel thing and how that affects the youth vote with then TikTok being able to get on their platform and 100 million daily users see a thing that says Joe Biden just signed a bill to ban your TikTok. What you going to do about it? I'm leaving the China and the security stuff out of it, and I'm ignorant to that, and I could have all that wrong, but just politically, that's where I'm at on it. Mike, what do you think about what's happening today in the Congress?
Well, I think politically that is the tough decision that Joe Biden's going to have to make, but he's the president of the United States, and I can't tell you how dangerous TikTok is to national security. It is a greater threat than probably anything, with the exception of Vladimir Putin's incursion into Ukraine, that the United States of America faces today. As Chuck just said, there's 100 million people. I want you to think about this for a second. 100 million people hooked, addicted to a platform in this country. And I know half of you listeners are saying, not me, not me. And then are adding up your hours in your head going, oh my God, maybe I am addicted to this thing that is wholly owned and operated by the Chinese Communist Party. Okay. There is no smarter, better way for a foreign adversary, which China is, to communicate to a third of our country at any given moment with whatever message they want. And let me make this clear. It's not like all of a sudden you're going to see, you know, a dancing girls video or some cat video stop, and there will be like some pro-China ad. That's not the way this works. This is weaponized military-grade psychological operations that can continually drive messages into the minds of a third of our public. This is like it's the Greek story of how Troy, the city of Troy, fell. This is a Trojan horse. TikTok is the devil. It's dangerous. We never should have letting it got this far. Are a lot of people going to be pissed off? Yeah. And you know what? By Monday, they're going to be on a different platform doing something else in some other different way. I think Biden's already said he's going to sign it if we can get it out of the Senate. But this is an issue of national security. The president needs to show some leadership. Be damned with the politics. This is like saying if we're getting bombed at Pearl Harbor, and I don't mean to, I'm not overstating this, how dangerous I think TikTok is. And this is not just Republicans, right? This passed overwhelmingly on this vote just a few minutes ago. The president of the United States has to take the political grenade and make sure that the security of the country is foremost in his thinking, despite the political fallout. I know it is a tough decision. I'm not as worried as the political fallout as I think others are. I think people will simply move on. Granted, I'm not on TikTok. I'm consciously not on TikTok, because if you are, all of the data on your phone has been sucked out, all of it, not just from that app. That is what the app does. It's going into your phone. It's pulling your data out, and you're giving one of America's greatest foreign adversaries a direct plug into your brain. So I feel pretty strongly about it.
As you can probably tell, I'm on the TikToks, and I'm a big TikTok star. Y'all should watch me on the TikTok, as I think that Instagram, TikTok, or whatever is already soaking all the information that they can get out of me. And if you can take my information and do something with it, you have at it, because you can't even understand what I'm saying half the time. The last thing I want to say is this week we have a rollout. We talked about Kyrsten Sinema not running in Arizona. Now it's a two-way race between Latino Marine combat veteran Ruben Gallego against Kerry Lake, who is a very much Trump candidate. In full disclosure, because I have to say this on this, I don't work for very many candidates. We do mostly IE work here, and I don't talk about my work with them either, because that's not what I get paid to do. Plus, they pay me not to say something about my work. But with Ruben, he's one of my best friends. I've been working with Ruben for over a year. I think Ruben is very special. We align on our values of growing up poor kids and getting an opportunity to do jobs of a lifetime. And we really tried to tell that story in a launch ad that started with the Lima company in Iraq, where he was the hardest hit group of guys who were sent overseas to protect all of our freedoms. And we rolled out a pretty powerful ad yesterday. Mike, what did you think of it?
I thought it was a fantastic ad, right on message. And I got to say, I'm just generally impressed with Ruben, the congressman. He's got a pretty progressive a voting record, but he's got his finger on the pulse of where I think not just working class Arizonans are, but where Latinos are at. And, you know, my good friend, Alex Padilla, I've known Alex for 25 years now. He's going to play a very important role in this next chapter of the Latino story. But I think Ruben Gallego is going to have a really, really substantive role in determining how well the Democratic Party does or does not do with Latinos. And I like everything he's saying. He's one of this members of the Border Security Caucus. He understands the working class. He also understands the limits of cultural issues with Latinos and doesn't try to push the party orthodoxy beyond where the community's at. So I can't say enough about how I've seen him mature and develop as an elected official over the course of his career. I think he's more than ready for the Senate, but I think specifically to the point, the ad really hits home in exactly the right way. And I'm just watching not just the messaging y'all are putting out, but the candidate's performance. And I think you're just really well positioned. I'd love to have him on the show because he's one of the few Latino elected officials. And I say this lovingly because so many of them are friends, but he's one of the few, I think, I could learn a lot from just by listening what his political perspective is and what he's trying to accomplish.
You know, that's why I work for him and not a lot of candidates. And I think you're right with Alex and him, Senator Padilla, excuse me, is that, you know, Ruben grew up with a single mother who was a secretary. He didn't have a bed till he went to college because he had all sisters. And because he was the lone boy, he had to sleep on the couch in the living room. That's just kind of what you do as the kid, right? And he worked as a line cook. He worked doing regular jobs. There's very few regular people in Congress, and there's very few regular people named Gallego in Congress. There's very few regular folks named Gallego who went overseas and watched his best friends get shot and killed, literally defending for our freedom. So when the right tries to own freedom, liberty, family, faith, he gets all of that. You know, and sure, his voting record had aligned a little more with progressives throughout his lifetime. But at his core, you will see in this campaign, he will run on the values that he believes there should be a secure border. He's going to talk about it just like Mark Kelly does. He lives in a valley in a state with a border. It's going to sound a lot the same because they both are veterans of war, right? One may be an astronaut and one may be a Marine. But I think you're going to see Ruben do stuff that's really special that I want to try, that he wants to try, about bringing back Latinos that may be thinking more Republican because nobody's ever met them where they're at to have a conversation about what it means to have to provide for your family, what it means to be son or daughters of immigrants, but also want to be an entrepreneur and want to do other things with your life. Like, I think these are the unique things that we're going to try. It's kind of like when I was working for Bernie, is that there's going to be a lot more runway. That's why, and you know this, Mike, you'll laugh. That's why I don't work for candidates most of the time, because I'm sick and tired of candidates, you know, that don't understand a damn thing.
Yeah.
We don't get to run a campaign anymore. Modern campaigns, y'all, are run with a poster and a media firm, and that's it. And you don't need any strategy. You raise a lot of money and you buy a lot of TV ads. There's much more that can go into that if you'll allow yourself. Your first thing, foray into a campaign should not be do no harm. It should be, oh my God, what can we do to grow, right?
I think so. I will push back a little bit and say there are some people that have pushed on the entrepreneurial working class sons and daughters of immigrant messaging, because I was doing it with George W. in 2004.
Sure. Yeah.
And I see so many shades of that campaign, and I'm grateful for what y'all are doing, because that's where Latinos are at. And Alex is a dear friend of mine. Senator Padilla is a dear friend of mine, but he's from California. He's not worried about his right flank. And you got to have somebody in a battleground state like Arizona, where it's competitive, and you've got a competitor like Congressman Gallego, who intuitively, instinctually understands where the community's at. And I think he's going to be so good for the party. He's going to be so good for the Latino community. And frankly, he's going to be so good for the country. He already has been great for the country.
I've already reached out to Ruben, Congressman Gallego. He's agreed to be on the show. We're just trying to figure out when it'll be good for him to be on, because I know we have a lot of questions to ask about his philosophy of how he's going to take on this race.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody this week for listening. Make sure you like us. Make sure that you listen to us. And when you like us, you know what I mean. You got to like me and you got to put up with Mike. I get that. But make sure to call your mama. Make sure that you have a great week. Make sure that you share this with all of your friends. Tune in to the YouTube portion of this, because I'm going to be asking for everybody to tithe for maybe 10%, since I look like a Baptist preacher today. Thank y'all for tuning in, and goodbye.